Hello, this is allegedly Liam Neeson. You know, the man with a very particular set of skills. This week, my skill is promoting my new movie, The Commuter, which is now on Blu-ray, digital, and DVD. I don't know what any of that means. I do know that I've been asked to read the following poem. Make and taken on a plane. It was called Nonstop. It was insane. Make and taken on a train. It's called The Commuter. I bring the pain. I'm not reading any more of this. Okay, thank you, Mr. Neeson. Yes, this episode of 10 Foot Cinema brought to you by The Commuter, now on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital, from Lionsgate, and Wame Kole Sarah, the director of Nonstop and The Shallows. And I would bring Mr. Neeson back, but he appears to have killed six people on the way to his car. I have some phone calls to make. I hope you're wearing your Fundawear, because it's time for a Fast and Furious episode of Junk Food Cinema brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Family. Take a drink every time you hear the word family in this episode or this movie.
Take a drink of Corona, fact, yes. Every time you hear the word family. This is the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, Lieutenant of Megaforce, a man who absolutely lives life a quarter mile at a time, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
Hello, sir.
This has been a long time coming.
Oh, my God.
You know what, Brian?
Yes?
The safe is on the move.
Oh, my God. I don't know the last time. I mean, I've been excited for a lot of our episodes recently. I don't know the last time I was this excited for an episode of Junk Food Cinema, because you're right. It has been a long time coming. And if you want to understand what I'm talking about in terms of long time coming and going back and revisiting where we came from, how we got to this point, the starting line, if you will, our entire back catalog is on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes, of course. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema.
And then you can live life a podcast at a time.
If you decide that your safe is on the move and you've got a little bit of extra money to spend, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema is a great way to financially support this show so that we don't have to pull off daring heists at 85 miles an hour.
Well, actually, I think more appropriately, by supporting through Patreon, you help take care of family.
You do. You actually do.
you actually put diapers on Brian's family. That kid, all of them.
That kid shits fast and furious. Don't worry about it. So patreon.com/junkfoodcinema for as little as $1 an episode, you will get bonus content that nobody else gets to hear. For $5 an episode and higher, you actually get a full extra episode called The Deep Dish. And this week, even at every level, you're getting a full extra episode on Ocean's 12. So we keep the content coming more than Universal keeps these sequels coming. So just definitely patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And one brief announcement, we are going to be appearing at Denver Comic Con June 15th through the 17th. So if you are in that area and planning on attending Denver Comic Con, or if for some reason we're the reason you now want to go to Denver Comic, I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons to go to Denver Comic Con besides our ugly mugs, but we will be there. We will be doing a live episode, TBD as far as the movie. Very excited about it, though. So come say hi and come say hi in the Mile High City.
On top of that, those of you movie fans out there living in the Midwest, I'll be appearing at Cinepocalypse this year with Scott Derrickson. So from June 21st through June 28th, we will be hanging out in Chi-Town, going to the Music Box Theater and watching movies together. So join us.
Nice. And then in July, the weekend immediately after July 4th, we'll be in Minneapolis for Convergence.
Yeah, I got a real. I also have a book coming out in June. You'll find me here in Austin and then in Boston promoting said book. So,
from Austin to Boston.
So June's gonna be fucked. Let's just be honest here. June, I'm not gonna see my wife. I'm not going to see my dog. I'm just going to be on the road.
It may be the case that the only way to hear us doing episodes in June is to go to one of these live events, because we may not actually be in town to record any of them.
That is a possibility.
Just a heads up. Well, guys, we are in the middle. We're in the second lap or the third lap of Heist Month here in April, and we are arriving at a movie that is part of a franchise that I have been wanting to talk about pretty much since the first episode of this show.
You have, but you wanted to just do an episode breaking down all of them, because any chance you get to do a panel on all of the Fast and Furious movies, you're like, I'm doing a panel on Fast Furious movies. I don't know how many times you've done it, but you've done it multiple times.
It's been a few times for sure. I have been on multiple panels about. I sincerely believe, and I want everyone to understand and remember the core values of Junk Food Cinema when I say this, irony free, that this is one of the greatest cinematic franchises of all time. And not just for the number of movies, but for the interesting way that they have rebranded themselves, that they have entered a second age, a golden age. And it all begins with 2011's Fast Five.
All right, listen up. The men we're after are professional runners. We find them, we take them as a team, and we bring them back. And above all else, we don't ever, ever let them get into cars.
This just went from Mission Impossible to Mission of Freaking Sanity.
We stick to the plan. If you're gonna survive, stop thinking like a cop. You're in my world now.
And that is why we are talking about Fast Five. And frankly, as much as this is a Fast and the Furious movie, this is a fucking heist film. This is the first movie in the entire franchise that went, you know what? What we were doing before is fine. It got us to where we needed to be. But let's do something else. Let's do something where we take the formula of what we've been doing. And I've been watching the Oceans movies a lot lately.
There's a reason why we went from Oceans 11 through 13 into Fast Five, because Fast Five literally is what happens when you have a franchise, you don't know what to do with said franchise anymore, but it's just making money hand over fist. And then you go, well, shit, let's rip off this dead series. Sometimes beat for beat, sometimes unabashedly.
Oh my God.
Rip it off. And then make something really amazing with it. This is Hollywood at its finest. This is what happens when you make big budget entertainment and borrow from great stuff and then add to said great stuff and make something worth watching and rewatching that is not mere imitation. So let's just lay this out and let's go full Brian for a second. Fast and the Furious in 2001 was something really special and weird and different. It was part throwback, part very much of its time. It was a movie that was a coke-fueled fucking action cop movie that was really based on an article. Someone read an article about this car culture going on and said, we need to make a movie about that. And then Kate built this whole crime thing into it. And then it was such a monster hit, we had to make another one. But it was such a monster hit, just as Vin Diesel hit, he said, yeah, I'm not coming back. He priced himself out. He said, I'll come back for $25 million. And they said, ha, 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 no. And he went off to make a bunch of movies that did not work. And so they had to completely reframe it. Without Vin Diesel, they were like, well, none of these other characters are going to make any sense without Vin Diesel. So they chucked all that out, made a second movie, which was terrible. And then they made a third movie, which is also terrible.
Well, here's the problem, is that they continued to go away from what made the first one so enjoyable, which was the pairing of Vin Diesel and Paul Walker.
And that's... But they couldn't repair that. But these movies were just making money, and so yeah, I kept going out, and they were trying to find another magical formula. They just kept trying. Oddly enough, the third film is one that LA hipsters fucking love.
I struggle with the way that the third one is received because I think it is garbage, and I still, as much as I love the franchise, think it is garbage. The only reason that I appreciate the first four movies in this franchise is because, much like what we talked about with Ocean's 12, because you need that to build up to the point to where we get with Fast right. Five.
What I will say about the third one is the second coolest fucking character in the entire franchise shows up in here. And then they kill him.
Yeah.
And then they spend the rest of the series kind of retconning that and pretending that that movie actually happened like 10 years in the future, to the point that we get in six. It's in six?
Yeah, it's at the very end. It's like the mid-credit sequence in six.
No. I'm talking about like where we have that flashback where they bring back Lucas Black, and it's supposed to be happening at the same time.
That's the eighth one.
But yeah, where he's clearly aged like 15 years, like the angel of death touched him on the shoulder, and he doesn't look anything like he does in the first movie, but he's there anyway.
It's fighting all those angels with Paul Bettany really aged him quickly.
But so... Then Vin Diesel's career is scattered on the rocks. None of his movies have taken off. His career's pretty much done. Everyone who came out of that first movie, except for Paul Walker, in fact, including Paul Walker, their careers are really nowhere. Paul Walker at this point, and I know this from people who worked on the franchise, had given up on being an actor. He didn't want to act. He loved two things in life. He loved surfing and he loved his kid. And he would spend all of his time surfing with his kid and being a dad. That's what he loved. He loved surfing and being a dad. And so he would, every 2 years, do a Fast and Furious movie, get that nice big paycheck, and then live off that and go surfing and hang out with his kid. That's all he loved in life at that point. And so when they came to do another Fast and Furious movie, he wasn't like, for those of you that may have forgotten, there was a period of time where Paul Walker was the new hotness. They were putting him in movies. You can actually watch movies that aren't Fast and Furious movies that have Paul Walker in it. He doesn't have any emotion. He doesn't know how to emote, really, without Vin Diesel in the room. It's in fact, I used to joke that Vin Diesel was like that Paul Walker was a ventriloquist dummy, and Vin Diesel was the only one who knew how to work it to get more than one emotion out of him. But he was good in these movies. He was solid in these movies, but these movies weren't good. And then anymore. And then the fourth one came and everybody needed a gig. And someone said, well, let's try one more and see what happens. Boom. Huge. And then it's like, well, shit, that was a bigger hit than anything else we've done. Everybody wanted to see this. Well, what do we do now? And that brings us up to the fifth movie where they're like, well, what if we kind of make these guys like, they're anti-heroes, but what if we make them all heroes, but heroes in a heist sort of way so they can still be bad guys?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, let's just make Ocean's 11. And so they fucking make Ocean's 11. Yes. They steal part and parcel from entire segments of Ocean's 11.
They steal entire characters from Ocean's 11. They steal entire like comedy beats from Ocean's 11.
Yes.
But here's the thing, and the thing we haven't mentioned yet, and why it's so appropriate that they're doing this, is this franchise started with plagiarism, with high-speed plagiarism. The first movie is just Point Break on wheels.
Yes.
Down to the fact, you think I'm crazy, down to the fact that
I don't think you're crazy.
I'm not talking you specifically. I'm talking to the
you're talking to the podcast
that lives in the microphone.
The third person in this conversation, yes. Who speaks up and we never hear.
Yes, that person. The first movie, literally, and Point Break both have a scene involving a guy who pretends to like tuna fish sandwiches to get closer to a girl. It's not an accident. Like, it is absolutely a ripoff of Point Break.
Who doesn't love tuna fish sandwiches?
I don't know. Apparently the tuna fish sandwich at this place is not very good, but he still keeps eating it so that he can get closer to Maya. And then at some point, you know, he has that scene where he literally can't bring Vin Diesel to justice and just lets him go. Like, and by the way, The fact that they're stealing DVD players in the first movie is still the funniest goddamn thing to me. Like, that was going to be what made them. If you think about what they're stealing in Fast Five versus what they were stealing in Ocean. See, I'm doing it. In The Fast and the Furious, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, small potatoes, to say the least.
Well, we're stealing gas and then giving it away.
We're stealing gas and giving it away. But the fourth one. The fourth one is where these movies became, and I'm cribbing from my friend Eric Davis over at Fandango, the Marvel Cinematic Universe for dude bros, because that's exactly what this became. They started bringing everybody back. And the fourth one was such a big deal because when the first one, we had Paul Walker, we had Vin Diesel, we had Michelle Rodriguez, we had Jordana Brewster. And then in the second one, we only had Paul Walker. And then in the third one, we had neither Paul Walker nor Vin Diesel. And the fourth one, it's like, the guys are back. We have a very interesting subplot with Michelle Rodriguez getting killed. And it's like, oh, wait, and here's Han from the third one in the opening scene. And he has that comment where he's like, I'm going to go check out what's going on in Tokyo. And you're like, no, because that's where you die. And you realize they're playing with chronology. And that's the thing that really delights me about this franchise, is that they are doing things that are so complicated narratively that they absolutely do not have to do, but they're taking the chances in doing anyway, like messing around with the chronology of the events of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, if this franchise were made in the 70s, they would have never given a shit that Han died in a previous movie. They just wouldn't. It's like, but he, yeah, we don't care. Like, it's like we mentioned before, the minute you sit down and try to figure out what the fuck the Friday the 13th movies are actually about, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just like, it just doesn't make sense. And watching people's wide-eyed stares as they realize for the first time that, holy shit, wait, none of this actually, like, not that the whole killer thing, like, the entire backstory of Jason Voorhees doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
That is the era that would, but here they're like, no, we're going to make it make sense. In fact, to the point that after the eighth movie came out, there was a Justice for Han movement in which they're like, no, wait, Letty can come back, but Han can't come back. Han can't get justice. We have to actually bring Jason Statham into the fold and make him a like of, no, fuck you. Han is the second best character in this franchise.
By the way, bringing Jason Statham into this cast makes about, I don't know, 8/10 of the cast look like a Bosley commercial because there's so little hair going on. It's like between The Rock, Vin Diesel, Jason Statham.
It's cool to be bald.
The ghost of Yul Brynner.
It's cool to be bald in this universe.
It really
fucking
is. By
the way, in fact, while we're talking about universe, I would like to put out a theory about the Fast and Furious universe. I believe in the Fast and Furious universe that they exist in a universe where human beings are significantly more durable than in any other. And I don't just mean like superhero physics for the heroes.
No.
Like, we've seen it. We've seen them do stuff. Like, there is a stunt in this movie that, as much as this movie breaks the laws of physics, you're just like, no fucking way they would have died.
Yeah.
Like, just no fucking way. You do not drive a car that fast off a cliff and jump out of it and hit the water that far down and just swim out. Like, that's not how water works. Like, it is. Except that they do, but they're not alone. This movie alone is full of invulnerable bystanders.
It is the only way that this movie makes sense to where you don't hate the heroes is if you imagine that all of the bystanders are unrendered NPCs in an RPG they can't get hurt.
They're equally indestructible. There is a group of prisoners on a bus.
Oh, they're all dead. There's no way.
They do not. We see them. They're not strapped in.
Yeah.
That bus flips 87 motherfucking times. And we're told, and remarkably, there were no casualties.
Yeah. We're told by Perd Hapley from fucking Parks and Recreation that there were no casualties.
After the single most Grand Theft Auto of the entire series, where a bus trips over a car. It's one of those things that if it happened in your game, you would run back, you would catch the video of it, and you'd put it online in in the game physics section of any fucking social media site, because dear God, that's fucking retarded.
But that being said, that's the opening 3 minutes of the movie.
Yep.
And that stunt would have been the finale of any of the previous movies.
Yeah, because this movie gets fucking insane.
It really does. And it creates a precedent that they would then try to outdo with each subsequent movie, which is the other thing I love about the Fast and the Furious movies, is that they are always trying to top themselves, which is very much like the Mission Impossible movies, where it's like, what's going to be our crown jewel stunt sequence? And this movie's like, we're going to have four of those motherfuckers.
Yeah. And honestly, I still to this day feel that this is the best of the Fast and Furious franchise.
It's hard to argue with that. It really is
the one that I revisit. It's the only one I own. I watch it when I travel a lot. It is such a fun movie. It is infinitely rewatchable. It hits all the beats perfectly. Unlike there are several. I love several of the movies in this franchise, but every other movie in this franchise has some kind of fatal flaw. It has something like, I love Seven, but Seven doesn't need Dubai. Dubai feels like filler.
I really thought you meant the movie Seven, and I was like, my biggest problem with David Fincher's Seven, not enough cars.
No, but the Dubai, you don't need anything that happens in Dubai for that movie. And there's a few moments in that movie that don't totally work, and then there's all this other amazing stuff that makes me love it. Same way with One. One is a really good movie, but it gets a little sluggish at points for a movie that's supposed to live itself, you know, its life a quarter mile at a time. A couple of those quarter miles are a little slow.
Well, to be fair, it's a quarter mile in L.A., so it takes like 35 minutes to get down there.
But this movie, every beat works. Every, even things that are starting to become dated are still really work. This movie's chemistry is just magic. And the fact that this movie exists the way it does, I think, is the reason why the franchise is still alive, is based upon this movie and the decisions they made with it.
You realize we're talking about going up against the most powerful guy in all of Rio?
Yes, we are.
Then we're going to need a team.
Well, and they made us care about characters that previously in the franchise were like, oh, you're the substitute for people I actually wanted to see. Case in point is Roman, played by Tyrese, who in the second movie, I was just like, I have had enough of you, and it's frame three. And in this movie, because of the way they build the crew for the heist, and because of the unity of narrative that they're going for in the entire franchise, when he shows up in that sequence, I'm like, all right, cool, it's Roman. And in the back of my head, even when I first saw this movie, I'm like, why am I excited about this?
Oddly enough, Roman is one of the two oddities that I want to talk about with this movie, because there are two very weird things about this movie that you just kind of look the other way on, and Roman is one of them. Because name another heist movie in which there's a character that is this obnoxious and is constantly saying he wants no part of it. Like, every other heist movie, when they're like, Roman, you're up, it's like, yes, it's my turn to shine. And he's like, nah, man, why are you sending me in to do something on this heist? Like, I'm just here to make snarky comments and collect $11 million, which oddly enough is the same amount of money everyone gets in Ocean's 11.
And it's the same amount they give to David Paymer at the end of Ocean's 13. Like, yes. To the penny.
So, but why are you asking me to go in and do the one thing that I'm fucking good at? Like, it's,
I feel like he's a necessary evil, though, because you have to have at least one character in the crew going, this is fucking insane. Or like, it's the one thing, weirdly enough, that keeps this franchise grounded is Roman being like, that's fucking crazy. Why are we doing that?
Yes. And I get that portion, but he actively tries to avoid having to do any work whatsoever.
This is true.
It's very odd that it's like, there's no other heist movie that has that character, because no one else on a criminal crew would fucking tolerate that shit.
So we haven't done this yet. So let's break down the actual plot of Fast Five, which is, again, the fifth movie in the franchise. Previously, at the end of Fast and Furious, which is the fourth movie, the second one directed by Justin Lin, who is the godsend to this franchise.
Isn't this the third one done by Lin? Didn't Lin do three?
I'm saying Fast and Furious. The previous one was the second one. This is, in fact, the third one. But at the end of Fast and Furious, even though the crew saved the day, Dominic Toretto is still sentenced to 25 to life. This movie opens going, fuck that, we're breaking him out immediately, flips a bus, and then the movie starts.
Yes.
Flip a bus, start the movie. That's how we kick things off. And from there, we find out that Dominic is hiding in Rio in South America.
And headed towards Rio.
Headed towards Rio. So Brian, played, of course, by Paul Walker, and Mia, who is Jordana Brewster, and they are now a couple, head down there to find Dominic. And they end up finding him in the middle of pulling off a job. This is what's crazy to me, is that he's pulling off a job to steal cars from a train that was given to him by the guy who played Vince in the first movie, who has not been in this franchise since the first movie.
No, they bring him back.
They bring him back. And again, this is like, they're literally like, everything that ever mattered before, no matter how insignificant it seems now, is going to, because we are building this Marvel Cinematic Universe. So Vince gives him a job. And so 15 minutes into the movie, now we're robbing cars from a high-speed train. And that's where we get the moment where the car goes over the cliff in what I can only assume is in the movie so that Vin Diesel can out triple X triple X.
Before we get there, though, there is another oddity to this movie. This comes to the second oddity. The oddity of this movie is the entire plot hinges on Dominic fucking up the job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is not where the way the movie feels, the way the movie is structured, they get fucked on the job. But no, they didn't get fucked on the job. Dominic fucks up the job. He calls an audible on the job that causes the bad guys to go, these guys that were brought in are ripping us off. Fuck them. Dominic fucks up the job, causing everything to get fucked up and the whole movie to happen. This whole movie hinges on the fact that Dominic Toretto is a fucking asshole.
Which you're not legally allowed to say, according to Vin Diesel's contract, where he's not allowed to lose. It's very much like the Fred the Hammer Williamson contract, where it's like he's not allowed to lose fights. He's not allowed to be wrong. He's like, he has to win every race. Like,
despite the fact that this entire movie, everything fucked up that happens in this movie, these guys being hunted to almost being killed and needing to get revenge, all because Dominic fucked up a job.
But who do they actually pin that on? Vince. Vince becomes the scapegoat. Like, I love his, like, I almost wish I didn't see you taking that chip. And it's like, I almost wish you didn't fuck up the job on the train.
But Vince can't say that.
Like, you can't. You're not allowed. Like
there's
legally.
That moment where it's like, Vince is like, man, if you hadn't showed up and fucked everything up, I wouldn't be in this position right now. I've got a fucking wife and a kid, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And you just fucked up everything because you had a bad feeling.
It's very true. In the course of trying to basically get out from all of the heat that they're under from, you know, breaking Dominic out of federal prison, they decide that what they're going to do is they're going to try and buy their freedom by ripping off the local drug kingpin in Rio,
who has become an asshole himself.
Yes.
And also, I'm sorry, there's a third peculiarity to this movie.
You're going to keep finding them.
No. This fits in with that. There is a scene in this movie where our drug kingpin sits down with a bunch of other people and explains his methodology. And his methodology is he explains the difference between the Spanish and the Portuguese.
I love that scene so
much. It's a great scene. It's an amazing scene in which he explains how he has control over Rio and the fact that he gives, rather than coming, you know, with violence and fighting and being brutal, he gives everybody jobs. He gives them schools. He gives them electricity. He gives them running water. And thus he owns them. Then for the rest of the movie, he proceeds to be a violent thug rather than buying his way out of everything. Like, seriously, when they catch Dom and Brian, he doesn't go, I'm sorry, there was something fucked up with the job. We literally just need the chip. You can keep the car. And I'll be happy to give you $100,000 and we go our separate ways and we never see each other again. But I need that chip. That's why I hired you guys for that job. And someone didn't let you in the room. And I'm very sorry about that. Can we get this fixed? That's exactly what he sets up in that speech. Like he would have done. Instead, he's like, kill them.
Yeah.
Like every response is brutality. Like,
yeah, it's really weird from a South American drug lord that his go-to response is violence.
No,
right?
No. That's why it's acceptable in the movie. But why have that whole speech about the Portuguese if you're then going to offer a villain who shoots his way out of everything instead of buys his way out of everything? He actually, like, one of his guys gets hit by one of the best crime team ups in the world, and his answer to that isn't, "Don't ever do this again, but I understand." It was, "I'm going to murder this man for no apparent reason." Like, he is everything he says he's not supposed to be, which makes an interesting character quirk that he believes he is that guy, but he's really brutal.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things that makes you question, is that an actual character concept of him? Is he that duality? Is he the Gemini? Is he, like, he wants to be the smart guy, he wants to be the peaceful guy, but is really the violent thug? Or is it just reshoots and rewrites, and we kind of lost the idea of what that is, and we need to hate this guy so the audience doesn't realize that this entire movie hinges on the fact that Dom fucked up a job?
And we're going to distract you from ever thinking that that's what's going on by inserting Dwayne The Rock Johnson into this franchise.
Two things. One, I need a translator.
Claro, we have that in the public relations.
Lightning Evers.
A patrol officer.
You heard me.
But why? We have many more experienced people.
I like her smile.
What's the second thing?
Stay the fuck out of my way.
The impact of adding The Rock to this cast, to this series, cannot be measured. Like, you need, like, a seismometer to really, like, accurately gauge how effective it was bringing The Rock into this series.
Currently, in the tabloid press, there is a lot of chatter about The Rock and Vin Diesel having a problem. And if you talk to any fans of Fast and Furious and say, you've got to lose one of them, people are actually like, well, you lose Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Like, you keep The Rock. Why would you get rid of the Rock? And it's like, but The Rock is literally just the cop inserted in. Yeah, we don't care. We like The Rock better.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're at each other's throats, which is difficult because neither one of them has a neck, but they are still at each other's throats, and I agree 100%. When, like, I love Vin Diesel in these movies, don't get me wrong, but there comes a point when you start thinking to yourself, why is it that his other most successful role is one where he only says, "I am Groot," and isn't even on screen? Because charisma and Vin Diesel, they don't really go hand in hand.
I disagree.
Really?
I do.
I love him despite his lack of charisma, personally.
I think he has a very strong sense of charisma. I think the problem is that he stopped being an actor and went solely with the alpha male. If you watch him in his performance roles, he's actually a very talented actor. But I think he really, I feel like, this goes back to the Paul Walker thing. I feel like these movies have become this steady paycheck for these people. They get together with their friends. They make these fucking movies. And then The Rock came in, and The Rock is kind of fucking that up by trying to make these movies good and being professional and shit and not throwing his weight around in that way. And reportedly yelling at other members of the cast when they disrespect the crew. Like, shit like that. Like, what is this guy doing? This is our meal ticket. This is our thing, and he's fucking it up.
I guess that's really where what I'm saying is coming from, is when you're on screen with
the most electrifying man in all of entertainment,
and you're Vin Diesel, like, you may have some measure of charisma, but it's getting swallowed up by the, oh my God, when The Rock should kick the screen down when he, because that's what it feels like when he enters this movie. He kicks the fucking screen down to do it. And he just comes in and he is like, all right, here's what we're going to do. And he's got that great line about, I hope you're wearing your Funderwear. And he tells the local cop to stay the fuck out of his way. He gets the one F-bomb in the movie. Like, you're just like, I know you're supposed to be the antagonist and you're working against our heroes, but I kind of want you to win because I love you that much. And apparently that role was originally written for Tommy Lee Jones, which is really, which makes sense when you think about his capacity in the movie.
It makes sense when you remember the 90s.
Well, like when
Tommy Lee Jones literally played that role several fucking times.
That's something you literally could have done, is just made him Gil Gerard from U.S. Marshals and The Fugitive. And that would have been the same role. But apparently, and this has been confirmed by our researchers, It was some girl on Twitter who just recommended to the studio that they should put The Rock in the movie. And they were like, huh, all right. And they did it. So guys, keep tweeting at your favorite studios. You never know when someone will be listening and someone who's desperate to save their job will go, what does Twitter think we should do? What does Twitter think? I don't know. We got to do something. What does Twitter say?
Dude, let's hop in the time machine and go back. Because this is a decade ago, right?
It's 2011, so it's 7 years ago.
7 years ago. Go back in the time machine and look at... Are you sure it's 2011?
I am sure it's 2011.
Jesus Christ. I thought I'd written a review for this one. maybe I didn't. How excited was everyone the minute we found out there was going to be a Rock Vin Diesel fight?
Yes.
Like the very notion of that, the very notion of that had us electrified. And so boy, howdy, when they are just a pair of swinging dicks in this movie. They're just batting each other around and then they get to that fucking fight. And that fight is crazy.
It really is.
Like it is like 2 solid minutes of Jordana Brewster yelling for them to stop.
Because someone's going to die. And that someone may be the Earth itself.
And I love what they do with that because they, I mean, again, it's one of those Vin Diesel doesn't lose moments, but Vin Diesel grabs a wrench, which, by the way, they reference in this movie to, hey, by the way, remember why Dom was going to be arrested to begin with. Like this guy literally beat a man almost to death with a wrench, takes the wrench down in the rock, chips out the fucking concrete.
Yes.
And The Rock realizes he could have fucking killed him in that moment, but he doesn't because The Rock now knows who this dude is. And then we get a parallel moment later, which is just so great. We'll get to that in terms of the plot. but the way they set that up and the way they do that and the way they build this relationship between Dom and Hobbs is really great so that by the time you get to the nigh unwatchable eighth installment, all of this makes sense and you just want to see these people together again.
It's disappointing to me because I did enjoy 8 when I saw it in theaters, but the more I've revisited it, the more I realize that it is such a pale comparison to even the movie directly preceding.
How
it.
Do you make a boring Fast and Furious movie?
Yeah.
Like I have issues with 6. I have strong issues. Like, I mean, I honestly feel that the even ones are, except for 4, the even ones you don't even need to ever revisit. I like the first 2/3 of 6 a lot. And then the minute they jump out of 2 different cars and catch each other in the air over the highway and then fall 50 feet and they're totally fine. From that point on, the movie just becomes hot garbage.
Yeah.
But 7 again comes back and is great. So 1, 5, and 7 are all really great movies.
Wait, so you don't like 6?
I don't like 6.
I really like 6.
I hate
6.
The 27-mile.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because, again, the physics up until that point had been sound as a
power. No, but the physics, but like literally it's the moment where Dom catches Letty in midair where it's like, where it just gets so ridiculous that you're like, okay, I am watching a cartoon, but these cartoons aren't doing anything really interesting anymore.
See, I guess that's where I disagree. I think, yes, it is absolutely a cartoon, but I really enjoy, I think they're doing a lot of interesting things with that cartoon in 6.
See, with 7, they go back to what works in 5. And what we're about to talk about is it's back to the heist thing. It's like, we have a problem we need to solve. We need to solve it this way. It's not, I feel that every time this, they veer off and it's about betrayal and family, this franchise goes off the rails, and every time they remember, oh, you know what works? Stealing shit and being funny and cool, and that's when the franchise is great again.
And also remembering that too much CG will kill a movie. In fact, that was one of the big edicts with 5, is that they wanted to do a lot more practical effects, which is why the train heist that we talked about is almost entirely practical.
Yeah,
because
and it's amazing.
It's absolutely fucking amazing, and as is the big. Dragging the Safe Through Rio finale. But first, let's talk a little bit about this crew. We mentioned that we got Roman. We mentioned that we got Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, Jordana Brewster.
We've got Han Solo.
Han Solo, its actual fucking name.
His actual fucking name is Han Solo.
Han Solo, like South Korea-O. And then you have the two guys.
The Malloy brothers, the South American Malloy brothers.
I disagree. I think the Malloy brothers are congealed into one person named Tyrese, because in this movie, his whole job is to distract people by being Tyrese. He's doing entirely the job that the Malloy brothers do.
Except that the Malloy brothers are also, as we talked about, the tech wizards. They're not the full-on surveillance wizard, but they are the tech guys, these guys are the demolitions expert that stand around busting each other's balls. Or the brother, we don't know if they're brothers or not. They don't seem to be brothers, but they fucking act like the fucking Malloy brothers. And I guarantee you that's exactly what they set out. They're like, we need characters like the Malloy brothers. We need people who are bickering back and forth.
So they took the actual, it's like, there's something here about, there's some message here, I feel, that I'm not entirely comfortable with, where you take the actual work of the Malloy brothers and give it to the two characters who don't speak English, but you take the kind of personality of the Malloy brothers and you give it to who I'm calling First Take Tyrese, because there are a couple different moments in this movie where he has jokes that I'm like, didn't want to do a second take on that one. No, we're good. We're good with that line. All right, moving on. Like, this just turned from Mission Impossible to Mission in Freakin' Sanity. I was like, nobody wants to second take that. We don't want to punch that up. Okay, cool. Moving on. Let's go. And he has a couple moments like that where I'm like, if they just worked a little bit harder to give him a better line, I feel like we could have done something with that. But then we have Giselle, who
we have. Fucking motherfucking Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman shows up to be, let's see if I understand this correctly. So Wonder Woman, Groot, and I guess The Rock hasn't done his Black Adam movie yet. So we have two superheroes in the movie, which is fucking amazing.
They do a really interesting, a very interesting structural introduction of her, where when they start naming off the various characters, we see who they are because they've shown up previously or are introduced right there. And we see her on the motorcycle and we think it's a dude the way they're talking about.
Yeah.
And then pulls up and then we see it's a woman and then she's fucking badass. And she is probably the most badass person on this team. She is clearly the most successful member of the team in terms of always not only nailing her role in the jobs, but taking other people's jobs away and doing those.
For sure.
She is fucking awesome in this movie.
It is
really where people discovered her, where they're like, holy shit, this woman's awesome. And she is fucking great in this movie.
She is amazing in this movie. Right before they introduce her, they reintroduce Han. So automatically, you know, again, that the timeline is...
You mean Rusty, right?
I'm sorry. Who's always fucking eating. Yes,
he's always
absolutely walking.
He's fucking Rusty. He's the guy who is always sardonically chill about everything.
But again...
He's the guy they send to just kind of watch stuff because he blends in.
Which is bullshit.
And he's always fucking eating.
That is bullshit. I'm sorry.
He sticks out like
crucify
a sore
me
mouth.
If you must. But you bring an Asian guy into Rio de Janeiro because he can blend in? What?
And he eats constantly. He's always eating.
But again, they've parceled one character from Ocean's 11 out into two because Brian is the Rusty in terms of being like...
The second in command.
Second in command, who's also a blonde-haired Aryan. You know what I mean? And then it's like you've got the eating thing goes to Han because he just blends in, which again is bullshit. But
he's carrying himself exactly like fucking Rusty.
And then we bring in the tech guy played by Ludacris, who nobody really knew in Too Fast, Too Furious was a tech guy. Like, it wasn't really his thing. He owned a garage, which they call back to in this movie because that's what he wants to do with the money. But at no point in Too Fast, Too Furious did you spend any time with fucking Ludacris and go, ah, tech guy. You went, ah, owns a garage, and that was pretty much it. Not that he had a lot of screen time in the movie, but it's just funny that they were like, tech guy? We don't really... Okay, yeah, you're the tech guy. And they've done really interesting things with that since then.
Oh, yeah.
But it's funny how they've just completely repackaged him.
He's amazing in 7.
Yes.
Like in 7, he really is when... Watching 7 and then going back to 5, you really get a much bigger sense of why he's there and what he's doing there.
For sure. And also, he's got the line in 6 that I love. It's just, damn, guys, they got a tank, which is amazing. And in this movie, his first exchange with Tyrese makes me laugh every single time.
Because it's literally the getting out of prison scene from from Ocean's 11.
Ted Nugent called. He wants his shirt back. No, Roman...
They stole the joke!
Roman gets... Tej, who's played by Ludacris, gets out of his giant fucking, like, old school... I don't know if it's a Cadillac or... I don't know cars well enough. That's the great thing about this franchise is I should only like it if I'm a gearhead, and I'm the furthest thing from a fucking gearhead, and I still love these movies. But he gets out of his long, like, 1960s black car, and Roman says, when are you going to give Martin Luther King his car back? And Tej says, as soon as you give Rick James his jacket back. And they're just like, it's so good. It's so good.
And then they bro hug.
And they bro hug because everyone in this movie is bros. Even the ladies are bros. It's how these movies work. And then, of course, we get to that fucking finale where their plan, I actually kind of like their plan in this movie, which is to make the bad guy think that they're going to rob all of his cash houses where he stashes his money just so that they can find out where he consolidates all of it when he inevitably puts it there to keep it safe, and then they find out, oh shit, it's a fucking military police station. Fuck, what are we gonna do? And the answer, we're gonna steal the safe and drag it the fuck around Rio for a solid 20 minutes.
Yes.
The plan's working. You guys have every corrupt cop in Rio on your tail. You guys have to move fast.
Something I want to point out interesting that is very structurally interesting about this movie, something you do not really see in heist movies. And what I find amazing and totally works here is they devote time in this movie to solving a problem only to discover they will never solve this problem and they simply move on and do something else. They go and procure cars so they can get faster and faster cars to try to beat this camera system. They then spend an entire montage sequence trying to beat the cameras. And they keep trying throughout while they're doing other things to beat these cameras. And finally, they're like, y'all, we ain't going to beat these fucking cameras. We're just going to go get cop cars. Like, they throw out an entire section of the plan. And you never see that in heist movies. You don't see them wasting time on this, on something, only to have it fail. And then just do the simpler option that they should have done to begin with.
It's a moment of discovery that you actually don't really get from the Ocean's movies. I will say that there is and I think some people are turned off by the Ocean's movies because there is an inherent smugness where it's like everything that even goes wrong. Oh, but that was all part of the plan. We're never out of control of the situation, even when it looks like we are. Whenever we look like we're failing, it's for someone else's benefit because that's part of the plan. In this movie, you're right. They completely change their plan once they figure out that that's not going to work. So there is that element of like, okay, well, let's just try something else.
Let's just get cop cars.
Let's admit that we were wrong about how that was going to play out and try something different. But they fucking rip this safe out of the wall. It's dragged by cables behind two cop cars. And they proceed to roll a giant fucking Minecraft cube of death across the entirety of Rio. And it is one of the most spectacular, and I'm using that word very specifically.
Yes.
It is one of the most spectacular things I have ever seen in a movie.
It is pure spectacle. It is pure entertainment. I was, I had to cram last night. I had a very busy week, so I had to watch, three movies in a row to do our recording session. And I was just like, you know what? There's literally no plot points that I need to revisit once the safe is on the move. So they'll get the safe and I'll go, the safe is on the move, and I'll be happy. And then I'll just shut it off and I'll go to bed. Motherfucker, I did not. It was just like, I said, the safe is on the move. And my wife just goes, how long have you been waiting to say that? I'm like, for 2 hours now. So the safe is on the move. Fuck it. I'm still watching it. It's great. And just plowed all the way through to the end because it is just so fucking entertaining. It is so well cut. You don't care that the laws of physics are neglected on like a billion different occasions. You just have fun with it.
And not the least of which being the moment where we find out the big twist of that chase where they somehow switched off giant safes being dragged behind the cars in the span of an underpass.
Are you referring to second safe, just like Ocean's 11.
Yes. Oh my. And you know what? Just like the fucking Ocean's movies, this is science fiction, because there are moments when Hobbs uses technology. My favorite scene in this fucking movie is when Hobbs uses facial recognition software, which he just refers to as FRS, to determine that Dominic Toretto was in this car despite the fact that his face is completely covered.
Yes.
Guys, facial recognition software needs to fucking recognize a face.
Yeah.
That's why it's called that.
How about that science fiction time when Hobbs finds that he has a tracker, and he said, I just flipped the signal so that it is somehow showing that they're across town magically just by flipping a signal. Like, yes, this movie gets super science fiction. We can get a handprint off of Wonder Woman's ass and use that to open a safe.
Yeah.
Because science fiction.
Because science. And it makes you realize that by the time you get to Fast 8 and The Rock rips a concrete bench out of a wall and starts pressing it, is like not even in the top 10 most ridiculous things that have happened since 2011 in this franchise. Yeah.
I do want to take a small side note here.
Sidebar?
Let's go to the sidebar.
Yay!
Mix the drinks.
I'm making mojitos, motherfuckers.
So I'll take a Corona. Even though Corona does not appear in this movie.
Strangely, no.
No. They're drinking South American beers, apparently. But so here's what really weirds me out about this movie is how it's starting to become dated. There's one element of this movie that has become really dated, and that is how Ludacris treats women in this movie.
Yeah, that was very... Is there
a female member of this group that he does not talk about their ass? No, there is not.
And on top of that, like, yeah, I remember I watched this the other night and I was like, man, that is like super duper misogynistic. And I know these movies aren't necessarily given a lot of credit, even though this franchise has brought in more badass females than any other fucking film franchise.
They still don't have a single episode of them that doesn't have a scene that opens with a close up of a girl's ass.
That's true. This is...
I mean, that is the thing that's going to be looked back on in the future, and people are going to be like, "Wow, you couldn't show the cars first? You always go to the girls' asses, and then you show the cars."
This is like Ocean's 11. If the 11th member wasn't Linus, it was very tanned, half covered ass cheek.
Yes.
So I get what you're saying there,
and this movie avoids most of that. In fact, interestingly enough, this movie avoids the car race that you think you're waiting for, but at this point you're like, we know he's gonna win. They just skip the race entirely and we just see that they won.
Skip to the end.
But even then they still have that moment there. But that's acceptable in these movies because that's part of that culture. And it's like, look, you can say how you could talk about misogyny and broness all you want. This is that particular car culture. This is that myth that we're selling of what this is. But that doesn't explain Ludacris. And it doesn't explain the fact that he makes the same joke for both female members of the team.
He makes the same joke.
And they're
joke.
Also two of the most effective fucking members of the team.
He makes the same joke after he finds out that Mia's pregnant.
Yes.
And I'm just like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I had friends who said very similar things to me when I told them that my girlfriend was pregnant. But that being the case.
Did he smack the ass or did he grab it?
Did he grab on it? It's just like he's really invested. But the biggest, like the most misogynistic thing about this movie that nobody remembers. Giselle's name is never mentioned once.
Never.
She's never given a name in this
She's
movie.
She's one of the coolest members of the fucking team.
But can you at least tell me what her name is?
Yeah, no, it's from that period of time that Dom vanished.
Yeah.
That nobody knows what he was up to. He was kind of traveling the world and mysteriously showing up places.
He was on another planet. He went from Fast and the Furious to the Furians and just decided that he was going to be there. God, that was a terrible movie. Oof. Chronicles of Riddick, guys, don't bother. But yeah, we get to the safe just trouncing around Rio, causing what has to be like innumerable civilian casualties. But of course,
we live in this universe where there are none. And by the way, it is also pointed out three times in the third act that these are all corrupt cops chasing them, so we're totally fine with any fatalities.
It is, again, this is the Marvel thing, too. This is where the Marvel Universe idea comes in, where it's like, we have to find a way to make these antagonists not human so we can just wholesale kill them. It's why you're dealing with, like,
brought in everyone on our payroll.
Yeah.
The entire place is covered in corrupt cops.
It's why you're dealing with undead Asgardians and Thor Ragnarok. It's why you're dealing with, you know, Chitauris in the first Avengers. It's like, we have to do whatever we can to faceless Hydra agents in both Winter Soldier and in First Avenger. Like, it's the thing you do so that you can remain a PG-13 movie and still kill a lot of people. But what I will say this movie does is, you know, notwithstanding the bus crash that would have killed a bunch of felons, they have scenes where you actually do see people running out of buildings seconds before the safe crashes into it, which puts this movie, and don't fucking at me, bro, above Man of Steel, where they actually make an effort to go
totally at him.
People got out. It's not just wholesale death and it's destruction.
At the shit out of him over there.
I'm sorry. This
doesn't
take
him to task over Man of Steel.
This does a better job than Man of Steel of establishing heroes aren't causing the deaths of millions of people.
This does the deal G.I. Joe thing in the cartoons where anytime they would shoot at an airplane, they would eject before the airplane got hit or
fucking sidebar
or blew up.
My favorite moment of that G.I. Joe episode of Community is when Destro parachutes out. He's like, "There'll be a next time, G.I. Joe." And Jeff's just like, "No," and just shoots his parachute and he falls. And all the other G.I. Joes are like, "Did you just kill someone?"
Yeah.
We've been doing this for 30 years. We've never had a fatality. And it's like, yep, that's why. That is absolutely why. I fucking love this movie. You know who else loves this movie? Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert was very, very effusive with his praise. He said, "The movie is made of sheer, preposterous, and nonstop impossible action, muscular macho guys, hot chicks, and platoons of bad guys who are eliminated by the dozens while the leading characters escape certain deaths so easily it gets to be a habit." But he also said that Justin Lin is emerging as a first-class director in this second-rate genre, having shelved temporarily, I trust, the ambition suggested in his remarkable Better Luck Tomorrow, which, by the way, is a very good movie. If you guys haven't seen Better Luck Tomorrow.
It is. It's the indie film that got him his gig. Also, speaking of which, he did several episodes of Community.
This is very true.
Some of the best episodes of Community were directed by Justin Lin.
It's all coming together. The Oceans comparisons, the Mission Impossible comparisons, the Marvel Cinematic Universe comparisons. There's a lot of bleed over in that Venn diagram. That's all I'm going to say.
The Venn diagram?
That was an unintentional pun.
You
I'm doing
bastard.
I'm doing these
you
in my
fucking bastard.
I'm doing them in
you
my sleep
fucking
now.
Fucking bastard. Venn diagram, fucking shit, motherfucker.
And that brings us to
family.
That brings us to the junk food pairing, which I had to go with something that was of a traditional Brazilian street food. And I have to thank our researchers for finding several different types of Brazilian street food. But I have to go with the extudo, which is a Brazilian cheeseburger with everything. If there's one thing this movie has that the rest of the franchise would then copy, it's bringing in everything and everyone that you had seen before, that you had liked before, that you had spent more than 5 minutes with in this franchise. So, yeah, the extudo, the Brazilian cheeseburger with everything, is going to be my junk food pairing for Fast Five.
Okay. I would have gone with a Brazil, you know, just dinner at a Brazilian steakhouse.
But they just keep bringing it and bringing it.
They just keep bringing it. It's just nothing but meat. It is meat nonstop until you're just like, oh, okay, I've had enough. And it's fucking awesome. And it doesn't matter how full you are, how bad you feel afterwards. It was fucking amazing and worth every fucking penny.
It stands noting that this is the movie of all the movies in the franchise that got the most positive critical response. And I feel like it's the moment where a lot of people started to take these movies seriously or at least see them in a different light. I know for me, it changed my entire perception because I hated these movies up until, like, I enjoyed the first Fast and the Furious, but the sequels, I was like, go fuck yourself. I'm not interested. And then Fast Five comes out and The Rock joins the proceedings and that fight between the two of them and all of the stunt sequences and all the practical effects.
Well, they found a formula that worked, and they found a way to make these characters interesting in a new way. And this is the best of the franchise. This is everything, to go full Brian, firing on all cylinders. It is.
I don't like that this is becoming part of the lexicon, but I also can't argue with it.
You can't argue. Venn diagram, motherfucker.
That was, I swear to God, not even intentional. It just happens.
I don't believe you.
I'm telling you.
I don't believe you.
I will be teaching a class at the community college called Pun is a Second Language.
So, but this is the one where everything works. Like, even like, as Roger Ebert said, you know, there is part of this film that you know it's preposterous. You know it doesn't make a lick of goddamn sense. And you just don't give a shit. It's like Ocean's 11. Like, yes, you are living in a science fiction fantasy universe where these characters are effectively superheroes, and you don't care. And this all works. It's great. I absolutely adore this film. I've watched it a billion times. I will watch it a billion times more. I would love it if the franchise could deliver another one of these.
I was just reading here that the logistics of the vault heist were so difficult that, like, the train sequence, they almost scrapped it entirely, and they had to use six separate vaults that they built to accommodate certain shots, and including a full-size vault and a lightweight vault that could be easily towed. It's incredible how much, and that is what I think people don't appreciate about these movies, is that, yes, there is a silliness. Yes, there is a certain abandonment of physics. Yes, there are some definite issues with gender politics in these movies, but there is also so much effort and love being put into them that it is hard to write them off. It is hard, and I think that's kind of why it satisfies a lot of the core values of junk food cinema, is that these people are busting their asses and caring so much about these movies that it's hard for you not to. If you're really paying attention, it is hard for you to write them off and not care, because they are like the passion that goes into weaving a cinematic universe that we find out by the end of six has a crazier chronology than a fucking Tarantino movie is incredible to me.
I mean, not only that chronology, I wanted to mention this. This is the movie that begins the really weird, convoluted relationships of Dom.
Yeah.
Pyramid. Yeah. That just becomes really, by the time you get to eight, it's like, wait, what?
You start to realize that Dominic Toretto is the Genghis Khan of South America. That dude is just breeding with everyone.
He's got women on every continent, and we're supposed to believe in the relationship.
It reminds me of a song by his castmate Ludacris about having, you know, various sexual conquests in multiple area codes. That's really what it was.
There's really a great map online that shows all the area codes where Ludacris has hoes. You should Google that. It'll show you on the map where all of his hoes are.
I remember being in high school and getting really excited when he said 317, which was the area code for Indianapolis where I grew up. And I was like, yes! And I'm like, why am I excited he has a hoe here? Like, what does that do for me? Oh, well, 317! Woo! Guys, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Don't you worry your pretty little heads. This is not the last Fast and the Furious movie we will talk about on this podcast, but I completely understand why it's the first Fast and the Furious movie we talked about on this podcast. I will at some point sit down and do a conversation about the entirety of the franchise. I have a feeling I will have to find a special guest co-host, because I don't think Cargill's going to be down for that.
No, I'm down for it.
You are down for it. Okay.
I'm down. I mean, we'll talk about what goes wrong in some of those things.
I do know that our friend and critic, Todd Gilchrist, has basically threatened my life if we do an episode on the whole franchise and don't invite him to be on.
Yeah, but he also threatened our life if we did an episode on 3 and didn't include him, because he's part of that crew.
It's okay. I want to know. I want to get the perspective from somebody who doesn't, like me, think that movie is a garbage fire. So we shall see. And like we said with Ocean's 12, if it weren't for 3, we wouldn't have Han. And Han is it's like you have to have it there so that you get to where you need to be.
I love that Vin Diesel is that Dominic Toretto is the third coolest character in his own franchise. Like, it goes Hobbs, it goes Han, and then it goes Dom. Like, that's he is no longer the coolest guy in his own franchise.
Everything that comes out of Hobbs' mouth in this movie makes me giggle.
Everything
like a
that comes
girl.
Out of his mouth in virtually every movie is amazing.
In this movie, they're like, I got good news and bad news. He goes, you know what, like my dessert first? And then he tells him,
time for the vegetables.
Give me the damn vegetables. It's like, give me the damn vegetables. Take the intensity. He cannot dial down the intensity for a second.
He can't. He's having the time of his life in this movie. Oh. And I think in the rest of the movies too. He's just like, he's just enjoying himself.
Oh.
And this movie, he's really enjoying himself and playing a great antagonist. But we didn't even mention the best moment of this movie. The very best moment of this movie. And we'll go out on this. is the best bro arm grab since fucking Predator.
Yes.
Like, it is like Dom is walking towards him. He's on the ground. His whole team has been murdered by fucking drug lord thugs. Dom is walking towards him in slow motion, carrying a shotgun. And he's like, this is it. This is how I go out. Dominic Toretto's going to put a bullet in me. I'm done. And then he grabs him and bro arm. And it's like, fuck yeah. Like, that moment, in the first time that happened in a theater, the crowd lost its fucking shit. Like, it was like, fuck yes. The Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson are on the same fucking side. Fuck yeah. And it is magic. And that moment, that is the best moment of this movie. Like, that arm grab is fucking fabulous.
And especially, and not the least of which, because the Rock's arms look like sweaty garden walls. They, like, I don't know what he did between movies to get to this point, but he is fucking enormous in this movie.
He eats like 12,000 calories a day and works out like 3 hours a day. Like, the man is just,
he looks like he ate Lou Ferrigno like every day. That's what it looks like.
That is a possibility.
It's insane. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
On Instagram and Twitter at Massawyrm, MassAwyrm.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can find this show at Junk Food Cinema, and of course, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. But we're going to go out reminding you that, much like Hobbs, this is a podcast that, you know, likes its dessert first.